Welcome to Lightning in a Bottle, the essential podcast for middle market business owners, key stakeholders, and the advisors who guide them. I'm Josh Pottinger and joined by my co-host, Jason Chirogiannis. Together, we lead ATX Wealth Partners, a private wealth management team at UBS here in Austin, Texas. Now, over the course of almost 30 years, we've built a vibrant community and have curated a suite of resources tailored for your success, from insightful white papers and cutting-edge research to exclusive in-person events and expert-led podcasts. We are here to provide the tools that you need. Now, if you're considering an exit, this is likely the most significant financial decision of your life, and typically, you only have one chance to get it right. So our mission is clear: to arm you with the knowledge to enhance the value of your business, navigate a successful sale, and of course, optimize your post-exit financial outcomes. Now with that, let's dive in and unlock the strategies that will prepare you for a prosperous future. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us for episode number 23 of Lightning in a Bottle, our podcast series that's devoted to bringing real-world perspectives and specialists to the conversation here to help business owners navigate their life cycle of building and growing and eventually exiting their company. And so I'm excited to have Mike Rudolph on our episode today. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Josh. Happy to be here.
Great. So for the audience, Mike is a managing director with KPMG, a corporate finance group. Mike, just give us a kind of high-level overview of your role over there and maybe a little bit about your background before we get started.
Sure. So most folks probably know KPMG, but they don't probably realize we have a middle market investment bank. So we have bankers that are selling companies and bankers like myself that are really raising capital for companies. And unlike what you would think of KPMG, you know, Fortune 500, you know, very large companies, the investment bank, call it 100 professionals in the United States, we're all very much middle market focused, right? So if you're, call it 100 million of revenue or so, or less, that's kind of where we play, mm-hmm. kind of in that 20 million of enterprise value up to, call it 300 of enterprise value. And the role that I'm in, helping companies raise capital, certainly we're not a bank, but we have a lot of different capital provider relationships, and then we more or less broker those processes to go raise the appropriate capital. And before this role, I was actually a lender. So I was on basically the side of the table where I go approach those folks to see if they want to potentially do a deal. So I was at a company called Antares Capital for many years. We got bought by GE, but I spent the first part of my career really providing loans to companies. And now I'm on the other side, kind of brokering those loans for predominantly privately held businesses.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, so for the listeners out there, the reason why we've got Mike on the call today is because our topic is going to be all about the debt sector and talking about what it is at the most basic level, and then why business owners may want to raise debt. And we'll talk about different types of debt, talk about the market, the current state of the market, what it was like last year, what we're seeing this year. Our objective here really is just purely to, you know, as always, is to educate those owners out there, both family-owned and entrepreneur-led companies. And so as you continue to grow your company, at some point you may need to bring in some additional capital, and that additional capital could be either in the form of equity or debt. And so our topic is going to be really focused here on the debt side here. So with that, let's kick it off, Mike, just with the very simple question, you know, what is debt and why would a business owner want to take some on?
Sure. And you mentioned kind of debt or equity. So maybe just to even take a quick step back, I mean, when you think about when a business owner wants capital or they need capital for whatever reason, you know, certainly you could raise equity, but I think most business owners kind of understand that equity means you're giving up ownership of your business more or less, because those dollars that are going into your company, there's really no collateral. It's not secured by kind of any liens. It's literally, hey, I think you're worth $1 million. I'll give you $500,000. And in turn, I get, you know, 50%+ of your business, and you could use that for, you know, whatever purpose that you all agree on. Mm-hmm. So when you think about debt, obviously you think about banks and other capital source providers, but debt is, there's collateral there, you know, to kind of back it, or it's really secured by basically the business, right? The liens of the business. So there's kind of some recourse if things kind of go sideways. You know, lenders have different abilities to get that money back. And we can get into some of those nuances, but I guess that's the big difference between debt and equity is debt, obviously the holder of that debt or who the person providing that debt has a lot lower kind of return threshold versus if you're investing equity, you know, you're expecting, you know, a 20 or 30, probably a 30% return over time. Whereas a lender really just wants to make sure they get their money back in the form of principal payments. And obviously they want to earn some sort of interest on that. And that kind of depends on the type of capital, which again, we'll get into it.
So just to interrupt there. So, okay. So we're talking about between the equity and the debt market, you always hear, you know, equity, raising equity is more expensive because you are giving up an actual equity stake. So what are the pros and cons of raising equity versus taking some debt on?
Yeah, so I think the pros of raising equity is...
From both sides, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. So I think from a business owner, a lot of times, in theory, you would probably rather raise debt than equity, just generally speaking, because if you raise equity, you're giving up ownership of your business. But however, like everyone's seen Shark Tank, I mean, a lot of those companies are very, very early stage or even kind of like an idea. So they can't really raise debt because there's no collateral support to support that loan. So there's really no earnings, or if there are, it's not a lot to kind of support it, or there's really no assets that you could kind of collect. You know, you could basically say, okay, you have a lot of inventory or you have a big warehouse, you know, similar to a mortgage, like I'm going to take that as security in case you don't pay back the debt. So really the good thing about equity is any business, as long as you agree and articulate what you think your value is worth, because obviously the higher the value, that same $100 million of equity, or let's say $1 million of equity in that scenario, if you could kind of explain to that investor why you're a $10 million business versus a $3 million business, you can raise equity, but you still have to give up ownership, right? But but obviously you want to give up as little as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as you get larger and you're a business owner working 23 hours a day, and you know, depending on the business, you're always kind of concerned about things that can affect your company. And once you get to a scale where it's just a larger business, you may be able to raise debt, but you may say, you know what, like I want to bring in a private equity firm or a strategic investor that knows my industry, kind of understands what I'm going through. And yes, I'm going to give up ownership, but I want to give up ownership because I want that sounding board or maybe even a partner to kind of help alleviate some of my stresses running that business, right? So in that scenario, you're happy to give up ownership because you want a partner that can kind of help you grow or get to the next level.
Right.
So when you think of debt, I mean, look, a lot of our clients are privately held business owners, like I mentioned, and a lot of folks, they've never had debt. But if they're at a scale, probably the threshold really is if you're a couple million of EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation. And that's just what a lot of lenders look at when they want to give you debt, right? If you have $1 million of EBITDA, they may say, I'll give you $2 million of debt because that's only a 2x levered deal, you know, the 2/1. So in that case, they're comfortable because that's relatively low leverage. And leverage is basically just the debt over your earnings that could cover that debt. But for a business owner to raise debt capital, it's, I think, probably the biggest, you know, misconception is obviously a lot of folks, if they're just dealing with their local bank, that bank's going to say, okay, Josh, I helped give you your first loan. And in return, not only do they have a lot of rights to your business if you don't pay back, they could basically foreclose the business. They obviously have liens on all the assets. But what they also ask for is a personal guarantee, which is obviously a lot of business owners don't love. But, you know, that's really kind of the only way to secure that debt. But as you grow and get more sophisticated and you grow that EBITDA, a lot of business owners don't understand that once you get to a certain size, call it 5+ of EBITDA, you could find lenders that won't require you to give a personal guarantee. And that's obviously a scary proposition, knowing that your personal assets and your family wealth could be at jeopardy if you don't pay back that $5 million loan because something, you know, bad happened to your business. But I think that's probably the biggest misconception, that if you're of size and you go to the right types of lenders or get the right type of advice to go to certain lenders, yes, you could lose your company if things totally go sideways because you have this loan outstanding. But importantly, you're not going to get personally affected by that, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason why a business owner would want to raise debt is, I mean, look, equity is the same way, right? Obviously, I mean, equity, you're giving up ownership. But if you raise debt and you do it prudently and you feel comfortable that your business prospects are going to be able to service that debt, meaning, you know, pay the interest and pay the principal, you know, over time, it's just like a mortgage. You're going to pay that down and now you own your house free and clear of a bank's mortgage. It's very similar to kind of the debt in a business, but the difference is they're not 30-year financings. It's normally, you know, 5 to 7 year financings.
5 to 7 year financings. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, typically 5 year terms. I mean, you can extend it, or if it's kind of junior capital, and we can get into those nuances, but normally it's 5 year terms.
Got it. There's some slang that's always thrown around, turns, how many turns of debt?
Yeah.
So maybe define that slang for us.
Yeah. So lenders always look at like turns of leverage. So a turn of leverage is kind of the example before where you have $1 million of EBITDA and you want to get $2 million of debt. That ratio, 2 to 1, that's the leverage or the turn of debt. So if you're obviously a bigger company, let's say you're 5 of EBITDA and a lender wants to give you 4 times leverage, or, you know, a $20 million loan on that $5 million of EBITDA, that's 5 turns, or your leverage would be 4 times. But it's no different than when you're looking to sell, right? So the way a business, or the way, you know, really a private equity firm or a buyer, if they're buying a business, they're like, hey, I'm going to buy Josh's business for 10 times EBITDA. And again, 5 of EBITDA, I'm going to give you 10 times. So obviously you're going to get $50 million. They'll look to put some sort of debt on that. So a lot of times, maybe it's like a 50-50 ratio of debt to equity. So you could maybe get in that scenario 50% debt or 5 times, but then 5 times equity as well. So it's kind of the same when you're thinking about purchase price multiples off of EBITDA or leverage multiples. That whole turn jargon comes into play.
Right. So obviously, you know, as I think about what you just said during a purchase, some sort of event where there's a 50-50 debt to equity ratio, there's a couple things that come to mind, actually. Number one, debt and how that's priced is a function of the current rate environment and the health of the company and, you know, the health of the collateral. And so with respect to what's happened over the past couple of years with rates going from effectively zero to a much higher number, how that has impacted the M&A market.
Right. I think everyone's heard about the interest rate environment expanding drastically kind of the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. And there's two effects of that. I mean, one, it's just the uncertainty, right? I mean, like you said, we're at 0%, and currently that floating rate is at 5.3%. So clearly it skyrocketed, but no one really knew where it was going to stop. Is it going to go up to 7? I mean, you know, kind of who knows? And then there's also just the function of you've been borrowing at close to zero for so long. Mm-hmm. Now it just increased, you know, 500-600 basis points. That shock just hurt also the ability to service that debt because it just got so much more expensive. And again, most people understand that whole concept. If you bought a house 4 years ago, you probably didn't want to move. And I know a lot of folks didn't move because they're like, well, I have this mortgage at 3%. If I have to move, I have to refinance that mortgage. And now my new house would be mortgaged at 6%, right? It's just a big difference. However, you know, if you're an old guy like me, you're like, all right, well, back in 2006, 2007, 2008, rates skyrocketed as well, right? I mean, rates were, that 5.3 equivalent was basically equal. It's like 5.5% back then. And at the time, we had the highest M&A kind of environment in history at that point in time. But again, the difference is we've just had such a long, prolonged, low interest rate environment. It was just kind of a shock to the system. And, you know, as we talk about it today, I think once people now are just kind of used to it, and they know, you know, relatively high rates are here to stay. And I think a lot of people feel comfortable that rates aren't going to go up. In fact, you know, maybe they go down here a little bit in the near future. My sense is M&A is going to really take off, and it should be pretty profound here the next probably 24 or 36 months.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about a little bit about how debt is priced. Now, you mentioned the floating rate going from 0 to 5.3 today. So that's obviously an input. So what are the inputs in terms of how debt is priced and how negotiable that rate can be?
Sure. Yeah, so there's really two components of the pricing. And a lot of business owners probably heard the acronym over, you know, the last couple of decades of LIBOR and Prime. And LIBOR was the London Interbank, you know, offered rates. And that was just basically like the overnight rate. And that's really the floating rate part of, or you could also opt out for prime. But now, to further confuse everything, it's now the secured overnight financing rate, or SOFR, which a lot of people probably have heard of. But that's basically kind of the floating rate side of it. And then you'll hear SOFR plus something, right? And that plus is really the spread that the bank or the credit fund just basically wants to garner irrespective of what SOFR does. So if that rate goes up or goes down, it's going to be that rate plus the spread. So as we talked before, you took out a deal or took out a loan 2 years ago, and let's say it was SOFR plus five. So you're effectively paying whatever SOFR is plus five. Well, SOFR was basically zero. So SOFR plus five 2 years ago was effectively 5%. Mm-hmm. That same exact loan is now north of 10% because SOFR is 5.3. So again, that's kind of like what we said before. The same loan is 10% versus 5% only because of the function of that SOFR rate increasing. And that's all kind of Fed driven and broader economics, which is way above my pay grade on how that gets set and stipulated. There's that pricing. And really the way it's, loosely speaking, you know, size kind of matters, and the type of lender obviously matters. So the bigger you are as a company from a EBITDA perspective, you can get better pricing. Because again, like the theory is that if you're a 40 million EBITDA business, a heck of a lot has to go wrong for you to like basically like file and not be able to service that debt versus if you're a 3 million EBITDA business. But conversely, banks tend to be they're a lot cheaper, but the reason why they're cheaper is because they're going to provide a lot less debt. So they're going to give you a lot less turns of leverage or debt. And they're really going to be collateral driven. They're going to want to make sure you have a lot of assets or inventory or real estate, or they may even ask for a personal guarantee, which is why maybe their rate is SOFR plus three, but a credit fund on that same deal would be 300-400 basis points higher, but they're going to provide maybe more debt or leverage in that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But then coupled with that, a lot of business owners, they look at a bank and they're like, okay, that deal is SOFR plus three, or let's just say 8%. Or you could go to a credit fund, and really the difference is a bank is obviously regulated and a credit fund is a bunch of different investors put money together, and then that group is going out and investing it. So it's really not regulated from the FDIC. It's just pooled capital looking to make a return. So they can be a lot more flexible on pricing and things. But importantly, banks' amortization is going to be pretty high. So normally the way a bank looks at a deal is if I'm going to give you $10 million, they want to amortize, or the principal portion of it, they want almost like half that loan paid back in like, you normally within like 3 years. So if you had a $10 million loan, and let's say it's a 5-year term, I mean, obviously it may be 20% amort a year, Or it could be maybe a little bit less early on, 10 or 15%, but then it ratchets up. But if you think about it, from a business owner, principal obviously isn't bad because you're paying off your debt. But if you're focused on cash flows and the less amount you have to pay interest or principal, the more you can, you know, invest in your business. So a lot of times business owners are really surprised that, all right, all in, maybe I'm paying 5% interest on my loan with a bank, but I'm paying 20% amortization. That's 25%, where that same type of loan for a credit fund that, again, it can be more flexible because they're not regulated. Yeah, their rates may be double, but their amortization is like 1%. So from a cash flow perspective, it's sometimes a lot better with a credit fund or a non-bank because they frankly don't want to get paid back too quickly if the company's performing.
Right.
And one thing that we always get asked is people are like, well, Mike, if I'm paying 1% amort and this is a 5-year deal, like what the heck happens in year 5?
Right.
Then I own 95% of, you know, a big number. Coming from experience, since again, I was a lender, If you're performing, we're going to refinance. Hey, we'll give you the same deal, or you know, maybe we update it a little bit. Maybe we give you more capital, but you just, you know, refinance with that same lender, and or they just extend their terms 5 years. Or a lot of times companies are like, hey, I'm just going to sell at the end of the term because I want to retire and that timing works out well. So then you would just sell, and obviously you'd have to pay off that debt with the proceeds of the purchase.
That's really helpful. That's good insight between banks and credit funds, because I know the credit fund space has really exploded in terms of the amount of capital that's been raised out there. And so the fact that one is regulated and one is not regulated, I think could be both good and bad to a degree.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and one thing that we've seen, Josh, that as we kind of get into, you know, what is kind of the current state of the debt market. So a lot of, I would say, I mean, banks in general, but we're seeing a lot of regional banks that have pretty big real estate portfolios that are kind of getting hit hard and just having issues. If you had a loan, and obviously a lot of business owners have loans with those regional banks, and then we've seen this as advisors, where those banks are like, hey, these credits within our portfolio, they're performing, or maybe they're getting closer to some covenant violation, so they're kind of like on our watch list, but they're still good businesses. Even though they're performing, like, we want them out of the portfolio because other parts of the bank's balance sheet, real estates, other risky loans that they provided, they're maybe in default. And I don't know all the specific kind of math of how it works, but I mean, if you're a bank, you look at your portfolio and if certain companies, like let's say you lose money in one or other ones are just really getting negatively affected, that hurts your overall like risk rating and score, you know, i.e. because you're regulated.
Right.
So they want to basically refinance maybe other types of deals, or what we've even seen, kind of to my point, that size matters. Sometimes they just want their smaller deals out of their portfolio. And we kind of call that because they're having kind of liquidity issues. So we're seeing a lot of banks, just with loosely speaking, liquidity issues. They just want to get, you know, some of these other loans off their portfolio. And to your point, who gobbles those up is credit funds. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's really is kind of a shift because, and if you think about the market right now, if you had a $500 million debt fund 5 years ago, you were earning back then, again, SOFR was next to nothing. So you're earning, you know, whatever 5-6% on that. Those same deals are now earning almost 12% because of the increase. So I think a lot of funds just are like, listen, I would rather, I mean, that's a great return. And it's a return on a loan that's, again, secured and has a lot of collateral from the business, which is, you know, a pretty good investment.
Okay. So if you're a business owner right now and you've got a loan from a bank, what are some questions that you'd be asking? And you're performing and you're plugging along just fine. I mean, I think based on what you just said is like, if they're working with a regional bank, getting a handle on what their commercial loan or real estate portfolio loan book looks like and getting a sense of like, hey, you know, we're plugging along, we're doing everything that we've told you we're going to do. Is there a risk here that you could call this loan even because of other stuff going on in your portfolio, not because of me?
No, it's a great question. And as long as, like you said, you're kind of performing, you're hitting all your covenants, you're not in any sort of kind of issue from that standpoint, the only stress could be, hey, kind of what I said and what you alluded to, is that bank may say, hey, because we're having all these other issues, they can't call the loan more or less, because, I mean, you're in compliance, but they can say, hey, we have a 5-year term. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got another year and a half on it. Mm-hmm. We're not going to refinance you. So you need to go out and find different capital to refinance yourself. Now, that's no problem, because if you're performing, you're going to have all sorts of different lenders facing you. So that's not the issue. But look, sometimes it sucks having to pick up and leave, especially if things are going well. But I would say to the business owner, if you're not sure, because of course you're talking to your business development guy at the bank, right? And the sun's always out, it never rains, it's always everything rainbows. And you may not know how their portfolio is, right? And look, we even see it too. When we go to different lenders, banks, non-banks, credit funds, whatever, we may go to a credit fund and say, we've known these guys for 15 years, they're gonna love this deal. And then they turn it down and you're kind of like, huh, what else is going on internally at that firm or fund? So one good way to figure that out is if you have a $10 million loan with a bank and you're growing, you're doing things, go back to that bank and say, hey, I need another $5 million because of X, Y, and Z. And if they come back with a quick yes and absolutely, things are probably good, right? But if mm-hmm. they say, well, no, but, yeah, and it makes no sense why they're saying no,
right.
There could be other things at play there.
Okay. Very helpful. Okay, so we've talked about debt versus equity, pros and cons. We talked about turns. We talked about how debt is priced, both where there's two main components, and that's effectively the whatever the existing benchmark rate is, which is nowadays usually SOFR. And then the other part is going to be effectively a spread based on the credit risk of the company there. And we talked about sources of debt or the places you can go. You can go to traditional banks and then you can go to credit funds. So when we talk about rates, is there, when we talk about, you mentioned typically 5-year terms, are those floating rates? Are they fixed rates? Are they a combination? Or yes to everyone or all of the above?
Well, and it's an interesting question based on some of the different types of capital. There's really, loosely speaking, there's secured and unsecured lenders. And obviously the secured folks are cheaper and the unsecured are more expensive because, again, they don't have that those assets or collateral to come back if things aren't paid. But it's interesting because the unsecured guys, and a lot of folks might have heard like mezzanine lenders or junior capital providers, they historically have been, you know, call it 12 to 14% fixed. Whereas a senior group would be SOFR plus, you know, whatever, 4 to 6%, and it's floating. So if you're the senior side, you're kind of floating, but if you're unsecured, you're fixed. But as we kind of went through the math and the components, a lot of times this floating rate loans are close to 12, 13%. So it is interesting because a lot of credit funds that are maybe proposing on a 8 or 9 million EBITDA business and their proposed pricing is SOFR plus 6, well, that's effectively 11, 12%, but it could go up or it could go down, and you have maybe 1 to 5% amortization. A lot of what we're advising clients or at least providing that option, well, if you think rates are going to stay relatively, I mean, stable, but relatively high the next couple of years, it might make sense to look at a fixed junior capital or mezzanine lender because they're fixed at that 12%, right? So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, but to kind of answer your question, given the market that we play, which is really, you know, kind of the middle market and lower middle market, mm-hmm. you know, loans in that 10 to 200 million range, they tend to be all floating type rates.
Okay. So you brought up a few things, secured versus unsecured, mezzanine, junior capital. So would you start, like if I was to talk about debt markets, what would be the next level down if we're going to dig, pull the layers of the onion back? Okay, so first layer, debt. Second layer, would it be secured, unsecured?
Yeah. So debt, if you think about debt, bank loans, you know, leveraging your EBITDA by the various turns, I would call that senior debt. And the reason why it's senior is because it's senior secured by liens of the business. And those liens could be in the form of even like a stock pledge, right? So there's some recourse of the whole ownership of the business, or there's typically it's the assets, right? So if you don't pay us back, we'll liquidate your inventory or AR or your real estate. So you're, I mean, again, very similar to a mortgage and kind of the way a mortgage would work. So the first layer is senior, and there's different types of senior, either bank or credit funds, as I think we discussed a bunch already. But then the next layer down is unsecured, and that unsecured, I'm not sure why, but it could be called a lot of things. I mean, unsecured, junior capital, mezzanine, because I think that mezzanine means like second layer down, but basically it all means the same. Mezzanine, junior capital, sub debt, it's all kind of the same. It's behind senior. And effectively, you don't have that security or those liens on those assets like a senior lender would. You're effectively unsecured, which is why traditionally you are a lot more expensive, typically 2 times plus. Although in this market, like we just kind of discussed, it's getting closer from a price perspective. So you have senior, junior debt, and then behind junior debt, it's equity. And equity is, I mean, I guess there are different forms of equity, you know, preferred and common, but loosely speaking, equity is, you know, there's obviously no liens. You're just investing in a business and you're getting ownership based on the relative value of that business to what you're bringing to the table as a percentage.
Mm-hmm. So first layer debt, a bank loan, which is considered senior debt. Those are secured by liens on stock, on assets, and that can be either a bank, a traditional bank, or a credit fund. The second layer is your unsecured type of loans or debt, and that's called junior capital or mezzanine. That's basically the same thing. And usually that's more expensive, usually about 2 times, except right now you're seeing a little bit of a phenomenon in this space where they're kind of the same.
Correct.
Right now? Okay. And then your third kind of layer deeper, then you're going into equity. And then you get the different versions of equity, like preferred and equity. So what about these younger companies and venture debt? Where do you put that?
Yeah, so I always kind of chuckle at venture debt because to me, it's if you're charging 19 to 25%, I mean, call it what it is, it's equity. And yeah, if you want to make yourself feel better because you have liens and quote collateral, mm-hmm. but if you look at it, those liens and collateral, to your point, if it's a startup business, you know, maybe it's not worth a ton. So at the end of the day, it's just really, really expensive debt or equity. So yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what I said, like, you know, early on, if you're a business without super strong earnings and you don't have a lot of assets, I mean, really the only way you could kind of bootstrap or finance your business is obviously through equity, which you're giving up ownership, which is fine to a certain level. And then I think because of what we just talked about, venture debt kind of came along where they're like, all right, well, we'll kind of act as debt, but our returns are kind of equity-like, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of a different type of provider. I mean, obviously banks aren't providing much venture debt unless it's like secured by personal guarantees or something. Mm-hmm. And then credit funds, I mean, there's certainly credit funds that focus on venture debt. So there's options out there. I mean, frankly, we don't see a lot because I think there's probably specialized investment banks that only focus on venture debt, and they're probably more versed and have those relationships. But I mean, those types of lenders exist. But I think, you know, especially what happened last year with Silicon Valley Bank and others, and they had big venture debt portfolios. I think a lot of people are not overly aggressive in that type of financing, just given what we've seen the last kind of year and a half to some of those providers that gave those loans. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say there's not obviously venture debt deals going on right now. It's just not necessarily the market that I play. So don't have kind of specifics, but certainly you and I both know that those deals are occurring all the time.
Got it. What about, you know, the space that we spend our most time in is the middle market space. You know, we're helping entrepreneur-led and family-owned, privately held business owners navigate the complexities around tracking towards some sort of exit. And that's both on a personal financial side and also the business side. But if you have a company that's rocking and rolling, they raised money, they had a successful raise, they're tracking $40, $50 million in revenue, but they haven't hit a positive EBITDA. By the way, I hear different pronunciations. There's a little bit of talk about this after our roundtable discussion. Is it EBITDA or EBITDA?
You know, I feel like there's no right answer.
Tomato, tomato.
Exactly.
So you have a company, and I think there's quite a few companies in this predicament, which is it's tough to capital raise right now. It's expensive. You got higher rates. You've got companies that have been, they're a high growth company. They're tracking 30, 40, 50 million top line number, but they're still, you know, they haven't hit positive EBITDA yet. And they're looking for debt. They've already got equity, enough equity holders. They're looking for debt. So you mentioned early on in our conversation around typically 2 million or more in EBITDA or 5 million is where you start getting some traction. But how do the debt markets look at high growth companies that are still scaling up?
Sure. There is a pocket, a capital provider that focuses on exactly what you described. And I guess the new terminology is the way they look at it. You know, we've kind of talked about assets, right? You could lend against assets. You could lend against EBITDA via leverage. But there's a thing called ARR loans, and that's annual recurring revenue. So there are lenders that if a company is doing 30, 40 of revenue, they're not quite break even, but there's a path to profitability, call it over, you know, 18 to 24 months. And in that scenario, as long as they have revenue that's, you know, legitimately recurring, it's subscription based, you know, you can really get comfortable that mostly tech or software type businesses that revenue you're going to see next year, you can get loans predicated on that annual recurring revenue. Those multiples vary by a lot of factors, but, you know, loosely speaking, call it 2x. So, you know, in theory, you're a $20 million revenue business, you're growing well, and you're tracking the profitability, and a lot, and let's say of that 20 million, 10 million is legitimate recurring subscription-based revenue that you can almost book, you know, several years out, each of the next couple of years. You can get, call it 2x or more on that revenue as a loan. So call it $20+ million. And it really kind of works the same way with, you know, interest and those type of deals. Amortization is much, much less, or even it's waived for 2 years. Like, there's a period where you don't start amortizing until you hit profitability. But no, and I think the reason why these loans exist is because, to your point, right? Looking at assets or EBITDA, you have startup that literally have no track record, no anything, and it's kind of tough to give any sort of debt to that type of business. But, you know, you have this other type of business that, you know, is out there, as you described, and there are credit funds and plenty of institutions that would provide loans predicated on the kind of the recurring revenue on an annual basis.
And do you have a general idea on how those are priced?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a lot. I mean, it's a little bit more expensive than your traditional loans. But I mean, again, like if you think about, I mean, if you were a bank or a credit fund or you're looking to invest in different businesses and you're like, okay, well, I got this business that has 5 million of EBITDA and that's going to support my loan and I feel comfortable because of, you know, the modest leverage. But if that business is, you know, industrial or business service business, you feel good in your projections, but you're not 100% certain, right? But if you have a subscription business where somebody just signed a 5-year contract and they're going to, you know, what they're going to be paying you in 2 years, 3 years out. Now, again, a lot can happen and things can change. But because of that, ARR loans are, they're a good thing, right? People like those type of loans. So because of that, pricing is not all that different from kind of a traditional credit fund deal. So I would probably say in that scenario, $10 million of ARR, you have $20 million of revenue all in. You're going to be profitable in 18 months. I mean, that's probably going to be, you know, kind of that SOFR 6-7, kind of similar to a cash flow EBITDA loan.
Mm-hmm. So what about, we're getting actually towards the end of our our time here. So I want to wrap it up with any advice you might have for, say, CFOs out there that are running these companies that are thinking about debt and the idea of basically DIYing it, going out there and finding their capital themselves versus hiring an advisor. So this is a big old softball for you, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we've just spent 56 minutes talking about the nuances of different types of debt and who's out there and what they're looking at. And when you're a business development officer at any type of lending institution, right? Somebody that focuses on assets or cash flows or ARR or venture debt. I mean, I'm going to tell the business owner what I know I can get approved. Whereas there could be five other paths that they could go down and maybe get better financing for them, just because there's other options that existing lender, you know, just can't do, right? Just the way they're set up or structured or the way they fundraise. So to me, I think the biggest reason is you're a CEO of a business and you're running that business and you have a lot going on. And I raise capital for companies and this is my full-time job, right? It's kind of hard to blend the two, right? So you can definitely get a deal done, but it may just not be the best deal for you. And I say that because you're going to talk to that one or two lenders that hopefully they deliver what they're telling you they can deliver. But chances are you could probably do a lot better outside of that. Or you could do outside if there's just competition, right? If you have 10 lenders, that same lender is going to sharpen their pencil on a lot of different terms. That's, I would say, like probably the biggest reason, just from a time constraint and a knowledge constraint, and certainly kind of the best deal wouldn't be, you know, secured if you're trying to do it on your own.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, Mike, this has been really helpful. I honestly thought that this episode was probably going to be more like 25 or 30 minutes, but time got away from us here and it was good. I mean, I think this is a real helpful conversation that business owners and that are running companies or their CFOs could get a lot out of. So I really do appreciate you spending basically an hour with me this morning and talking about the debt markets. So any parting thoughts there, Mike, before we sign off?
No, I think, certainly appreciate the time and would love to be of help if and when needed. And even if it's kind of free advice type of thing, like you, right? We talk to a lot of business owners. And if one or two transactions a year, that's great. And if you give advice and made a friend or whatever, that's all good too.
Yep. Well, with that, I will go ahead and sign us off. And to all the listeners that are still with us, thank you for hanging in there. Hope you got a few tidbits in our conversation today. And we will let you go. Be safe, be well. And until next time, have a good one. Thank you for tuning in to Lightning in a Bottle. It's been a pleasure bringing you today's insights from the brightest minds in business. To stay updated with relevant content, exclusive events, and our latest podcast episodes, send us a note to atxwealthpartners.com. Until next time, keep capturing the lightning of innovation and turning it into success. I'm Josh Pottinger, wishing you a productive and prosperous week ahead. And don't forget, know your options, be informed, and plan early. Take care and be well.